Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. For 35 years through seven presidencies, the United States and its allies labored unceasingly to contain communism around the world. They used a broad range of diplomatic, military, and economic initiatives costing tens of thousands of lives and billions of dollars. They used economic programs like the Marshall Plan, military alliances like NATO and CETO, direct conflicts like the Korean War and the Vietnam War, indirect engagements like the Bay of Pigs, weapons treaties like SALT I, and also covert operations like the attempted assassination of Cuba's Fidel Castro. And yet, by 1980, communism was not only alive and seemingly well in the Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, mainland China, Cuba, and North Korea, but had also spread to sub-Saharan Africa, Afghanistan, and Nicaragua. Clearly, containment was not working. In this podcast, we'll talk about the President's Strategic Defense Initiative, which became the cornerstone of his plan to protect America. This month, at the Reagan Presidential Library, an exhibit opens called Defending America and the Galaxy, SDI and Star Wars. It features genuine artifacts from SDI, along with authentic articles from the Star Wars movies. But now, let's get back to our 40th president, who, in January 1981, determined that the time had come not merely to contain communism, but to defeat it. In his first news conference as president, Reagan bluntly denounced the Soviet leadership when answering journalist Sam Donaldson. Let's listen.
Mr. President, what do you see as the long-range intentions of the Soviet Union? Do you think, for instance, the Kremlin is bent on world domination that might lead to a continuation of the Cold War? Or do you think that under other circumstances, détente is possible?
Well, so far, détente's been a one-way street that the Soviet Union has used to pursue its own aims. I don't have to think of an answer as to what I think their intentions are. They have repeated it. I know of no leader of the Soviet Union since the revolution, including the present leadership, that has not more than once repeated in the various communist congresses they hold their determination that their goal must be the promotion of world revolution and a one world socialist or communist state, whichever word you want to use. Now, as long as they do that, and as long as they at the same time have openly and publicly declared that the only morality they recognize is what will further their cause, meaning they reserve unto themselves the right to commit any crime, to lie, to cheat, in order to attain that, and that is moral, not immoral. And we operate on a different set of standards. I think when you do business with them, even at a détente, you keep that in mind.
Now, when Ronald Reagan became president, he made himself very clear.
As the foundation of my foreign policy, I decided we had to send a powerful message to the Russians that we weren't going to stand by anymore while they armed and financed terrorists and subverted democratic governments. I wanted peace through strength, not peace through a piece of paper.
Ronald Reagan had long favored an alternative to the policy of MAD, or Mutual Assured Destruction, under which the United States and the Soviet Union each retained the nuclear capability to retaliate and destroy the other in the event of a nuclear attack. Looking for an answer, in July 1979, Ronald Reagan toured the headquarters of the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, as it's known, in Colorado. He asked Air Force General James Hill what could be done if the Soviets fired a missile at an American city. Nothing, Hill admitted. Nothing. All NORAD could do was track the incoming missile and then give city officials 10, 15 minutes warning before it hit. Reagan found that hard to accept, that after 3 decades of the Cold War, the United States still had no defense whatever against Soviet missiles. Turns out, SDI became Ronald Reagan's alternative to MAD. Looking at modern history, there were broader historical currents that can be traced back as far as Allied efforts to find a defense against German V-2 rockets, which became falling on England in 1944. In 1967, when governor of California, Reagan visited Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb. They met at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California, and Teller briefed the new governor about the work that had begun to try and figure out how to stop a missile attack on the United States. And this particular research involved space-based lasers that might be used to destroy nuclear missiles fired at the United States. With that idea in mind, Reagan criticized America's current nuclear policy by describing it as a Mexican standoff, two men with pistols pointed at each other's heads. He said, "Can't you military people come up with something better than that?" By March 1983, President Reagan was ready to unveil a revolutionary idea on the subject of national defense. First, he reminded the American people that
the defense policy of the United States is based on a simple premise. The United States does not start fights. We will never be an aggressor. We maintain our strength in order to deter and defend against aggression, to preserve freedom and peace. Since the dawn of the atomic age, we've sought to reduce the risk of war by maintaining a strong deterrent and by seeking genuine arms control. Deterrence means simply this: making sure any adversary who thinks about attacking the United States or our allies or our vital interests concludes that the risks to him outweigh any potential gains. Once he understands that, he won't attack. We maintain the peace through our strength. Weakness only invites aggression.
And then he introduced the development of a comprehensive anti-ballistic missile system.
I call upon the scientific community in our country, those who gave us nuclear weapons, to turn their great talents now to the cause of mankind and world peace, to give us the means of rendering these nuclear weapons impotent and obsolete. Tonight, consistent with our obligations under the ABM Treaty and recognizing the need for closer consultation with our allies, I'm taking an important first step. I am directing a comprehensive and intensive effort to define a long-term research and development program to begin to achieve our ultimate goal of eliminating the threat posed by strategic nuclear missiles. This could pave the way for arms control measures to eliminate the weapons themselves. We seek neither military superiority nor political advantage. Our only purpose, one all people share, is to search for ways to reduce the danger of nuclear war.
More about the Strategic Defense Initiative and the world's reaction right after this brief message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story. Let's hear the president explain his thought process.
Early in my first term, I called a meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, our military leaders, and said to them, "Every offensive weapon ever invented by man has resulted in the creation of a defense against it. Isn't it possible in this age of technology that we could invent a defensive weapon that could intercept nuclear weapons and destroy them as they emerged from their silos?" They looked at each other and then asked if they could huddle for a few moments. Very shortly, they came out of their huddle and said, "Yes, it's an idea worth exploring." Well, my answer was, "Let's do it." So the SDI was born, and very shortly named by some in Congress and the press, Star Wars. As the myths grew, one of them was that I had proposed the idea as a bargaining chip to use in getting the Soviets to reduce their weaponry. I've had to tell the Soviet leaders 100 times that SDI was not a bargaining chip. Some people may take a different view, but if I had to choose the single most important reason on the United States side for the historic breakthroughs that were to occur during the next 5 years in the quest for peace and a better relationship with the Soviet Union, I would say it was the Strategic Defense Initiative, along with the overall modernization of our military forces. I wanted to go to the negotiating table and end the madness of the MAD, MAD policy. But to do that, I knew America first had to upgrade its military capabilities so that we would be able to negotiate with the Soviets from a position of strength, not weakness. It was ridiculous for both nations to continue this costly, open-ended competition to build bigger and better offensive weapons able to annihilate the world.
His approach was innovative, purely defensive, even though the Soviets called SDI a strike weapon. And the New York Times called the initiative a pipe dream, a projection of fantasy into policy. Let's hear what the president said.
After careful consultation with my advisors, including the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I believe there is a way. Let me share with you a vision of the future which offers hope. It is that we embark on a program to counter the awesome Soviet missile threat with measures that are defensive. Let us turn to the very strengths in technology that spawned our great industrial base and that have given us the quality of life we enjoy today. What if free people could live secure in the knowledge that their security did not rest upon the threat of instant U.S. retaliation to deter a Soviet attack, that we could intercept and destroy strategic ballistic missiles before they reached our own soil or that of our allies? I know this is a formidable technical task, one that may not be accomplished before the end of this century. Yet current technology has attained a level of sophistication where it's reasonable for us to begin this effort. It will take years, probably decades, of effort on many fronts. There'll be failures and setbacks, just as there will be successes and breakthroughs. And as we proceed, we must remain constant in preserving the nuclear deterrent and maintaining a solid capability for flexible response. But isn't it worth every investment necessary to free the world from the threat of nuclear war? We know it is.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.